Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's a Tuesday Flames Talk. Steinberg along with you on this Tuesday, August 20th. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair. Hopefully you're having a wonderful 20th of August. And boy, oh boy, is the hockey world buzzing. The Edmonton Oilers have decided not to match the St. Louis offer sheets on both Philip Broberg and Dylan Holloway. Those two players are now officially members of the Blues. We had a Patrick Laine trade. We've got Ryan Johansson drama. We still have Askarov's future. Matty Beniers has signed a contract extension in Seattle. I feel like it's October. We say hello to our NHL insider, by the way. Frank Saravalli is joining us on this Tuesday on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Because, Frankie, we have got an absolute boatload to talk about. I thought August was supposed to be slow in the NHL.
Yeah, I think we had a two-week lull at the beginning of the month where everyone kind of went on vacation, development camps wrapped, and now a couple GMs are back in the office at the rink and a little antsy, and we're getting closer to training camp, so it's time.
Yeah. Frank, by the way, Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com. He will be our Tuesday NHL insider once we're back into regular scheduling come the season, but a little bonus, Saravalli. Let's start with Edmonton, my friend, and their decision not to match the two offer sheets with St. Louis. You had tweeted Monday night that it kind of felt like it was going this direction and that you wouldn't be surprised if the Oilers walked away from both. So I'd imagine you're not surprised at the end result on Tuesday morning.
No, not surprised that that's the path that they took. I guess it's really interesting to look at so many facets of this offer sheet scenario. I mean, this is no doubt a blow to the Edmonton Oilers, and there's no argument that anyone could make that today on Tuesday, August 20th, probably much to the joy of Flames fans in Calgary, that the Edmonton Oilers are better today than they were 8 days ago. It's not possible.
Yep.
That said, I can tell you a few things. One, I don't think the Edmonton Oilers are done. I think they're working on a few other things. Don't know if they're going to come to fruition or not. Two, they're really enticed or excited by the idea of entering the year potentially with some cap space. Right now, the Oilers can keep Evander Kane, who's not going to be healthy to start the season, on regular injured reserve.
Right.
And still have cap space. So they can activate him at any time and still have enough cap space to accrue upwards of, I think, $4+ million acquisition at the trade deadline. So they're excited about that possibility. That said, they're also now the oldest team in the league, which I don't know that it matters much, but they're the oldest team in the league, and they lost two players, their first-round picks in 2019 and 2020, mm-hmm. with really no future pipeline that's ready to flow right into Edmonton. So this was no doubt a blow by the St. Louis Blues, but I think they're looking at it a little bit differently than most might have.
I'm curious about a few things you said there. First of all, what type of things might they be working on? And I know that, you know, there's only so much that you can divulge, but are we talking about acquisitions for another blue line? Like, what type of things might they be working on?
Yeah, I think the Oilers are perusing the market to see how they can improve their defense. They have some flexibility. Like, if they really wanted to, they could make a trade and go into the season with the idea that Evander Kane started in the year on LTIR, and if they have to figure out whatever that looks like on the other end of it when he's ready to be reactivated, then they can figure that out. I think they're looking at a whole bunch of different things now that they have some cap flexibility. I can say that.
Okay. Could they, and my big question has been on this particular saga over the last week, Why trade CC Sunday night? That's and give up an asset with it. That's my only big head scratcher. I understand them not matching. I understand the cap implications. Why trade CC Sunday night though, when it felt like they were on a deadline? Why not wait? That's my big question now when it comes to how the Oilers have handled this.
And a fair question to ask. What I would say to that is, one, the Oilers, truth be told, are probably better off without Cody Ceci. And two, the player they got back in the deal in Emerson has actually played more NHL games than Philip Broberg. He's a natural right shot, which is what they needed. He makes $2+ million less, almost $3 million less than CeCe. And their head coach is familiar with him in having, he played for him in Hartford in the AHL, and he's younger. Like, there's some thinking that if the Oilers went into this next season with Emerson playing second pair right shot D, that the Oilers are going to be just fine. They think that his metrics and everything else was suppressed on a really bad team in San Jose, and that he has a lot more to offer. Now, again, I don't know if that's true. We'll see. There was so much to really wager on in this series of transactions. Speaking to one person in the Oilers front office, they said the last week was like free agency, the trade deadline, and the draft all rolled into 1 week because there were so many different layers to it to figure out. You had a wager on, will Philip Broberg, can he live up to $4.5 million this year and next? What does the future projection look like for Broberg, and what's his ceiling? Where does Emerson slot in? How can we rejig our salary cap? And I think the big thing that they came to was, or one of the things that they came to was, we really like Broberg, but what if he doesn't live up to $4.5 million this year? It's going to be even more painful the following year when you've got a new contract on the books for Leon Draisaitl, and then you're managing whatever the next Evan Bouchard contract looks like. They didn't really have the luxury or ability to find out.
Well, and I know that Stan Bowman didn't kind of give much update on Leon Draisaitl, but it feels like that's just a foregone conclusion at this point. I know there are some who would love to talk about Leon leaving the Oilers and that not getting done. That there's not really any worry about that, is there?
Not to my knowledge. Everything has been very positive.
Okay. What about St. Louis in this, Frankie? They make their play and they get both their guys. They give up a couple of picks. As you pointed out, the day that this got done, each contract was a dollar below the next compensation threshold. So not only do they get their guys, but it feels like they really have this planned out well to kind of hit that threshold of getting their guys, making it difficult enough for the other team to match, but not having to go through the roof when it comes to what they're giving up. But I'm curious as to how you see Doug Armstrong and the Blues in all of this.
I thought it was really smart, calculated, and impressive. I mean, think about all the things that had to come together to even make this happen. They had to go back to Pittsburgh and get that pick back to be able to even present the offer sheets to sign. They had to negotiate with two guys from the same team. They did it against a conference rival who, you know, may not be, you know, quite in their rearview mirror right now in terms of contender status, but these two players fit their age scheme. I think there's a ton of upside to Broberg, as mentioned, like watching him play in the Stanley Cup playoffs and the spot that he was inserted into, I thought was really impressive. And there wasn't, to me, there wasn't an insane risk profile here. Like, if these players work out, you're dealing with a really good middle six forward who can play center and can fly. And on the back end, I think a top four defenseman who fits your age scheme, that has top 10 pick pedigree, that you can plug right into your team and has shown the ability to play both the left and the right side. So these guys get paid. They get lots of opportunity in St. Louis. And if it doesn't work out, you didn't give up a ton. And their cap situation, their cap hits aren't really out of whack given what they can put together and, yeah, and put up in terms of production.
We're chatting with Frank Saravalli on this busy Tuesday around the league. Frank joining us on the program this Tuesday afternoon. It's Flames Talk, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, live right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Okay, moving away from the Oilers, what did you make of Monday's Patrick Laine trade? The Habs get Laine and a pick for Jordan Harris the other way to Columbus. What was your reaction to a pretty big trade on Monday?
I think this is a great bet by the Montreal Canadiens. The reason for that is, let's deal with the position of strength that they were operating from. They had a ton of cap space that they were able to utilize, which is a window into the Calgary Flames and their cap space and ways they can harness it. They dealt from a position of strength on their blue line. They had basically 10 NHL-ready defensemen, and we're going to have to make some really difficult decisions when it came time to training camp. Is at least 9, I think it's closer to 10 NHL defensemen ready to play right now. So they had a glut of guys to deal from, which is where Harris goes. They are looking at getting a second-round pick back,
yeah,
in exchange. And then they take on Laine, who has an obvious talent and potential. For the 26th ranked offense in the league last year, and they get a guy who can score at least 26 goals and is 26 years of age. It makes sense on a number of different levels, and I think a lot of people might hear me say that and then say, well, okay, but why would the Columbus Blue Jackets do that? I actually also like it from their perspective, because Don Waddell was really clear right from the second he took over in Columbus. We want people who want to be here.
Right.
We want players who want to be Columbus Blue Jackets. And if you want out, you want a change of scenery, we'll make it happen. We don't need any malcontents. We need a fresh start. Patrick Laine, after all that he had been through physically and mentally, I think needed a clean slate. He gets that. Goes back to another intense hockey mad market like he played in Winnipeg, this time now a few degrees up in Montreal. And this is, you know, and they get back a player in Harris that I think the Blue Jackets could certainly use.
Yeah. It's you talked about the use of cap space, and Montreal's free cap space wasn't at the same caliber or same level, just in terms of raw dollars, than where Calgary's is right now. Like, Craig Conroy's looking at about $19 million, a little more than $19 million in cap space. That's even after his work in free agency. How, whether it was Montreal and what they did, or even what San Jose did in bringing CC in, how can the Flames harness their cap space and use it as an asset going forward? What even can the Laine trade teach us in terms of how Conroy could weaponize that?
I think it's just an example of what you can do. I mean, I think that's another player who would have been a really strong fit in Calgary. A chance to build yourself back up, provide, maybe you could find some chemistry there with Huberto, one of the premier passers in the game. You've got an obvious shooter. I don't know if they were involved. I didn't actually check in on which teams were in the mix, but I found it interesting that so few teams were willing to take on Laine A in full, given that there's only 2 years left.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say you're the Montreal Canadiens and you're out of the mix this year. By the way, I think they can actually contend for a playoff spot this year. I want you to write that down.
Okay.
I'm afraid to disagree with you,
by the way, after my Vancouver lesson from last year, so I'm just going to write it down.
Yeah, you should be. I think they're – this is probably going to sound like a hot take. I think the Montreal Canadiens are ahead of the Detroit Red Wings.
Okay.
I mean,
Slavkovsky took some big steps last year.
Slavkovsky played at an 80-point pace the last half of the season.
Yeah, he was getting a lot of flack in that market and on social media, and then all of a sudden that narrative got shut right down in the second half of the season.
Kirby Dach was their best player in training camp, and he played 2 games.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a ton that I like about that team. Alex Newhook, he played 55 games. He was hurt. Their goaltending is fine. It's steady. It's locked in now. I think their defense, it could use a game breaker, but I'm excited to see Lane Hutson grow into that because I think he can be that guy. I think he can be an immediate difference maker. Anyway, my point was... let's say you're the Canadians, and let's say Patrick Laine comes in and scores 30. All of a sudden, if you really wanted to, you could turn around and flip him at the deadline, and you could get a significant leverage your cap space again. Retain half on Laine for the remainder of this year and next and the following year, the last year of his deal, and you've got a sweet, sweet asset to trade. If not, and you think he's a long-term solution, you've now basically gotten a 30-goal scorer for nothing.
Mm-hmm. And they had pretty good success with doing something similar with Monahan last year. So that's interesting.
And if you want to break it down even further, let's call it Harris for a second. And then Laine is just the free addition. Harris for a second is probably a good trade.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like it for Montreal too. I'm fully with you on that front. Matty Beniers signs a 7-year deal. What is it? $50 million on the final dollar figure. That's a nice piece of business for Seattle though.
It is. I mean, that contract is going to probably age really well, but you're only able to sign it because he had a really disappointing sophomore season.
Right.
And this is a guy that a lot of expectation and weight was put on his shoulders, nearly a 60-point rookie year, an incredibly intelligent player, I think has a ton of upside. And the Kraken obviously agree, but I'd want to know more and understand more about what broke down last year, and they'd be able to answer it way better than I would, but I just want some more answers and clarity there because it was really disappointing.
Yeah. What's happening in Philly with the Flyers and Ryan Johansson? Take us through where we are and maybe what the roadmap going forward might look like.
Well, it's probably going to be long and winding because his agent, Kurt Overhart, who, by the way, with the Flyers have some deep history with Cutter Gauthier and how that played out.
Right.
That's ugly to begin with. And they announced that they're going to grieve this and pursue, you know, getting back all the money that the Flyers are attempting to terminate on Wednesday. No contract in this league gets terminated without NHL, I don't want to say approval, but certainly they were made aware of the situation before the Flyers did it and probably, I would guess, gave their blessing to say that they have enough evidence to be successful in the termination. It's a complicated scenario because it's not often that you have a player that his contract is terminated for injury-related reasons, is what I would call it.
Yeah.
And I think the Flyers were perturbed, I think is probably the best way to say it, that this is my understanding of, this is what was told to me today. I haven't had a chance to fully fact check every part of it, but I believe most of this part to be true, if not all of it, that they traded, made the trade with Colorado, and Johansson came in. He obviously has a long history with John Tortorella, and he was never going to be an option for them to play out the string. So he arrives. He participated in morning skate. I don't know whether that was at Wells Fargo or whether that was on the road, but he was apparently a participant in morning skate. Found out after the fact that he was not going to be joining the team, and they sent him to the AHL, and he never reported, because he then reported to the team that he had a mysterious hip injury that he never told anyone about before in Colorado or Flyers doctors. So they apparently reviewed all of his medical history going back to Colorado, saw no evidence of any hip issue. And then this summer, this off season, the Johansson camp, I was told, wanted to pursue a surgery, which would keep Johansson out for the entire season and unable to play for this so-called mysterious hip injury that no one knew anything about beforehand. So the Flyers were saying this is an unnecessary surgery with no guarantee that it even fixes anything that may or may not exist. And you essentially want us to pay you the full $8 million that's remaining on your deal. The Flyers were on the hook for half of it. Nashville has the other half. And the Flyers weren't okay with that, and they moved to terminate the contract.
You're not kidding when you talk about this being a long and winding road now. Hey, that is a lot to wrap your head around. I'm really fascinated to see where this goes, because we don't, like, the one that came to mind right away, the last time it was somewhat contentious about a contract termination, I remember Mike Richards a number of years ago in L.A., but that was completely different. As you said, this is somewhat medically related.
That's not even the most recent. There have been other contract terminations. Evander Kane was behavior and reporting issues, like didn't show up to events and things that he was supposed to be at. Also had the fake vaccine card. Like, there's been a whole host of somewhat recent contract terminations for material breach, but no one has ever really, to my knowledge, no team has ever attempted to pursue something related to an injury. And in fairness, the Johansson camp through Kurt Overhart is saying that this is a significant injury that was sustained while playing hockey. This is going to be a pretty important battleground, I would think, for the entire NHL Players Association, that if this is a real hockey injury, this is a player that needs to be paid in full down to every last dollar. The other problem or part of this is the recent precedent and or history would suggest that when there is a contract termination, they go through a settlement process that doesn't end up with the player getting the full payment back, and the team usually doesn't have to suffer the full cap hit. So therefore, teams are incentivized to just attempt to terminate and then battle it out through arbitration after the fact and come up with some kind of settlement, that I think that leaves a lot of players and agents feeling really uncomfortable.
Okay. Last one, my friend, and that is on Askarov in Nashville. I remember sitting there with you on Friday of draft day, draft night, draft weekend at Sphere Las Vegas, and we were talking about the UC Saros contract and it kicking in once they announced it after July 1st and what that means for Yaroslav Askarov. Now, sounds like what was kind of you hinted at, this being inevitable, has happened. How likely is it that Askarov gets dealt between now and the start of the regular season?
Hard to handicap, because so many goalie situations are, for the most part, pretty well taken care of by this point in time. Like, there's not a ton of chairs left remaining on the game of goaltending musical chairs. Mm-hmm. However, because of his pedigree, it's a little bit different because it's not necessarily just about this year. It's about the future. I would say the Nashville Predators are highly incentivized to want to make a deal happen. They knew and or had to know that at that point in time, when you have a player that was taken so high in the first round, a goalie, and he plays for three solid years in Milwaukee, and then you sign who you believe is the backbone of your team in UC Saros to an eight-year extension, there's no path, there's no way forward for Askarov to be an NHL goalie in the Nashville organization. The problem is, for most North American-born players, you would go and just probably, if you're stuck, report to the AHL and play on because you want to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
Askarov, technically, if he wanted to, could just go play in the KHL. And I think what you'd want to try and avoid is any sort of circus for the Preds organization. You don't want that guy going to Russia, because then the question is he coming back?
Yep.
I think it's in their best interest to get that done sooner rather than later. But again, I'm sure they went into this eyes wide open, knowing that as soon as that eight-year deal news leaked, that they would be in a bit of a tough spot.
A pleasure to catch up with you, my friend. Thank you for doing a little bonus hit with us on this Tuesday. We'll catch back up after Labor Day and once we get back into regular season ahead programming. But good to catch up with you, my friend. Great work over the last few days, and thanks for all the intel. We will talk to you soon, my friend.
Yeah, always good to catch up. And hey, one quick thing I just wanted to mention, because I did mention Askarov and the potential of going to the KHL.
Yes.
He is technically under contract for this next season. But as we've seen with other goalies recently, it's not necessarily going to impede him if he wanted to play around that and go play somewhere else.
Right, right. Yes. Good to add, and I'm curious to see how that one plays out with a 22-year-old potential stud goaltender in this league. Thank you, Frankie.
Mm-hmm. See you, Pat.
Frank Saravalli, Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com. Our NHL insider joins us Tuesdays during the season, but with so much going on in the NHL right now, I thought it'd be a good day to get Frank on just to update us on everything. Flames talk underway. Thanks for being with us. And Frank joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, or call them at 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.